It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, parliamentary elections in Iraq, will they make a difference? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Iraqis went to the polls last week in the country's first election since the withdrawal of U.S. troops in late 2011. The lead-up to the vote was marred by violence with Sunni militants targeting security forces and members of the nation's Shiite majority. However, given that the country is teetering on the edge of civil war as a result of a growing Sunni insurgency, the election was carried out in remarkable peace. More than 9,000 candidates ran in Wednesday's race, with an estimated 22 million eligible voters, or approximately 60%. The largest turnout was in the northern Kurdish province of Erbil at 90%, with the lowest reported in Anbar at 37-40%. That was unsurprising, as the semi-autonomous Kurdish area enjoys relative stability, while the Sunni province of Anbar has long been one of the most restive regions in the country and is now where government troops are battling Islamist militants. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's State of Law bloc was widely expected to win the most seats in the 328-member parliament, but fall short of a majority, meaning he would have to cobble together a coalition, an undertaking that took 9 months in 2010. Al-Maliki, who has held power since 2006, also said he would open talks with blocs from all sects and factions to seek their support as he moves to secure a third four-year term. Meantime, attacks have surged in the past year, fueled in part by al-Maliki's moves last year to crush protests by Sunnis complaining of discrimination at the hands of his Shiite-led government. Militants have taken over parts of the Anbar provincial capital of Ramadi and the nearby city of Fallujah. Army and police forces have battled them for months but failed to regain control, and voting was not held in many areas. The death toll has climbed to its highest levels since the worst of the sectarian strife in 2006 and 2007. The UN says that more than 8,860 people were killed in 2013. Results of the parliamentary contest are not expected for several weeks. Well, for more on the conduct of the election and to what extent Iraq can prevent an all-out civil war and unify the country, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Sarhang Hamasaid is a senior program officer for the Middle East and North Africa programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Ahmed Ali. He's an Iraq research analyst and Iraq team leader at the Institute for the Study of War. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both. Sarhang Hamasaid, let me begin with you. Let's talk about the significance of this vote. Almost 60% of eligible voters turned out. That's quite remarkable. What's at stake, in your view, in the election?
This is definitely a welcome turnout from the Iraqi people, because the elections are an important milestone in Iraq's political transition. For 2 years now since the troop withdrawal, there has been some political gridlock in Baghdad that a lot of the political parties and the communities hoped that this election will break this gridlock and provide the country with an opportunity for working on some of the differences that they have been doing back and forth on. And the change that the different communities hoped for, the Sunnis, for example, they have specific grievances about how certain government policies have been applied specifically on them, like de-ba'athification, the application of the terror law, and the detention of a large number of the people. For the Kurdistan region, there are some specific policy and legislation differences on hydrocarbon and the export of oil, and on the management of the disputed territories, and also on the issue of the Peshmerga and their salaries and their command. For the Shia, there are issues of, and this goes across the country actually, jobs and better living conditions and the corruption and the security overall is a common topic.
Turning to you, Ahmed Ali, for your take on the significance of this particular election, the first since the U.S. troops left, and what's at stake for the country.
Carol, it's good to be with you. And these elections are clearly very important for the country. Iraq has experienced previous elections, and those elections have been free and fair. These elections, from what we have seen so far, have also been free and fair. And that's a good indicator about the resiliency of the electoral process in Iraq. For the general population, my colleague Sarhang is accurate in his description that they have looked to these elections for an opportunity to change the dynamic that exists in the country at the moment. Iraq, over the last 3 to 4 years, has experienced difficult moments and has gone through difficult times, including incredible deterioration in security, rampant corruption, and a polarized ethno-sectarian environment that has reflected on all of these affairs. And for the different personalities involved in the political discussion and the political competition, these elections are also very important for them. So for Prime Minister Maliki, these elections are a referendum on his performance and his tenure in office. He has been in office for 8 years now, which accounts for almost 80% of the time since Saddam Hussein fall on April 9th of 2003. And for his opponents, they are seeking to unseat him or at the least restrict his powers. Very importantly for the Iraqi Sunnis, who primarily live in areas where Al-Qaeda linked elements and militant groups are active, these elections represent an opportunity for them to either embrace politics as a way forward, or as the Al-Qaeda linked groups, including the Islamic State of Iraq and Sham, ISIS, has been encouraging them to embrace violence as a way to manage their relations with Baghdad and with the other social groups in the country.
I want to pick up on many points that Ahmed Ali made, turning to you, Sarhang Hamasaid. Ahmed Ali said that it appears that the elections were held in a free and fair environment. However, perhaps some would dispute that. For example, the elections in Anbar province, the predominantly Sunni province, this could be disputed. The turnout was much lower. To what extent does this undercut the legitimacy of the election? And also this question of the election being a referendum on al-Maliki. We shouldn't really assume that he's going to win a plurality. How do you address these two issues?
Definitely the elections did not provide equal opportunity for all the voters and all the candidates. People in Anbar, in Salah ad-Din, in parts of Kirkuk, parts of Ninawa and Diyala, where Al-Qaeda and the violence are pretty much have been the dominant forces and factors over the past few months, did not allow for either polling stations to be opened or for the candidates to go and describe their electoral platform. While in the south and in the Kurdistan region, voters had the opportunity to zoom in more on the background of the candidates and hear what they have to say. And for the candidates also, it has been an equal opportunity. For those who are with the major political parties, they have more access to financial resources, to media coverage, and to government resources that may sway the votes in one direction or the another. So the legitimacy issue will be mostly in the areas where the violence has been very high and people did not have the opportunity to vote. And even if the opportunity was there, that does not mean that they wanted to vote, because their concerns are about food, about security, about the needs of their family, and they do not have the opportunity to focus on what this election could offer them. On the question of the referendum on the prime minister, I think most of the political parties have had that referendum early on by attempt of a vote of no confidence. And in terms of the public vote, he will likely win a plurality within the Shia voters. But that doesn't mean that he will have a mandate to continue some of the policies that he was criticized for in the past. And this is a moment of change. And it's important that it will be looked at about what is at stake. I mean, there are certain things that should go beyond the person who is a prime minister. There has been criticism about the central government and the performance of the central government from the different communities of Iraq when Alawi was a prime minister, when Jafari was a prime minister. So it is important to look at what are the institutional problems of Iraq that cause some of these issues. And of course, the prime minister shoulders some of the responsibility as being the person in power and leading the country.
Turning back to you, Ahmed Ali, to talk about to what extent this is indeed a referendum and what the chances are of al-Maliki coming out on top, cobbling together a coalition, or do you see other actors, other politicians coming to the fore? Because, in fact, as Sarhang indicated, al-Maliki does hold a lot of the levers of power, controlling media and various ministries. He's really consolidated power in his hands, which is, of course, partly why many of the Shiite population are disenchanted with him, as well as the Sunnis?
It is certainly one of the big questions headed into the elections. The performance of Prime Minister Maliki and his electoral alliance. Iraq had the provincial elections last year, and during those local elections, Prime Minister Maliki and the State of Law Alliance did not perform as well as they expected to perform. What developed instead was anti-Maliki front formed by the different political groups, including the Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq, ISKI, and the Sadrist trend. And given the fact that the next prime minister of Iraq is going to be an Iraqi Shia, these two groups that are Iraqi Shia will contest for the prime minister position. Prime Minister Maliki, as we have studied him very closely for the last 8 years, and it is very clear that he never gives up. He would like to use any levers of power to stay in office. And he has demonstrated in past elections that he will resort to using the judiciary to his advantage, using the, in some cases, division of opponents, pressure on opponents, because for these elections for him are about protecting his interests and the interest of his inner circle. And at the same time, it is about protecting the interest of his political party, the Dawa party. Carol, I just want to touch very quickly on the idea of legitimacy of these elections. Considering the violence that engulfs Anbar, Nineveh, Salah ad-Din, and those predominantly Iraq Sunni provinces, the turnout is an encouraging sign. However, it is only the first step for the Iraqi Sunnis to have their grievances addressed. As the process of forming the government will move forward, and it will be a long process, a very protracted process, the Iraqi Sunnis have to perceive the opportunity that their turnout and their participation in elections was not only an exercise in an open political system, but rather it's a means to achieve an end that will address their grievances. And it will be critical for the next Iraqi government to be an inclusive government, not a government that excludes any social group from power.
We'll have more on the election analysis in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Sarhang Hamas Saeed, Senior Program Officer for the Middle East and North Africa Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Ahmed Ali, from whom you just heard. He's Iraq Research Analyst and Iraq Team Leader at the Institute for the Study of War here in Washington. We're discussing what's at stake in the aftermath of the Iraqi elections as the country teeters on the brink of civil war. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. And here's a shout-out to a loyal listener, Caleb Ulasi from Enugu State in southeastern Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email with comments and feedback to encounter@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and how you listen to the show, whether via the radio or the internet. Well, back to you, Sarhang Hamas Saeed, to discuss the problem with the Sunni insurgency, because, of course, you both said, and particularly Ahmed Ali just said, the importance of inclusion, including perhaps Sunnis in the governing coalition. I want to know to what extent that's even possible, given the sectarian differences and the polarization. And this insurgency doesn't seem to be slowing down in Anbar. We have Iraq descending, as many analysts say, potentially into another civil war. That may be hyperbole. What are your thoughts, and to what extent is the prime minister and perhaps his successor, whether it's him or somebody else, willing to perhaps change course so that, you know, this insurgency is stamped out and al-Qaeda can be on the wane instead of on the rise?
Well, as we look at this issue, we have to look inside Iraq and outside Iraq as well. So, for example, and starting with outside Iraq, the conflict in Syria and the pretty much open border between Iraq and Syria has allowed for the free traffic of weapons and fighters between both countries. And in so many ways, it turned it into a one-stage conflict. So protection of the border and stopping this is very important. And for that to happen, there are other actors in the region who are known to play a role in the conflict in Iraq through finance and through political blessings of activities that take place from the regional countries. So that is one important aspect. For the Iraqi military to be able to go and protect the border, which will be one-sided because there is no counterpart on the other side, on the Syrian border, to do this, the Iraqi army needs to be freed up, go and focus focus on the border. For this to happen, this is where we need to look inside Iraq. And this is the next government, whether it is led by a third term of Prime Minister Maliki or somebody else, there has to be an organized process to deal with this issue. There are elements of Al-Qaeda that you could not bring into a civil discourse. So the element of counterterrorism and fighting will still continue. But for that to be successful, lessons of Iraq itself and elsewhere tell us that the security forces will need the cooperation of the local communities. They will need to help you fight them. So they need to be brought into the political process, and the next government has a responsibility to lay out a process that is clear to all the communities how their interest will be protected in the next government so that they cooperate with it. There has to be measures that they can trust. There has to be efforts to unify the Sunni leadership, because if you listen to their religious leadership, to political leadership or tribal leadership, there are different views on this. That needs to be unified through a process, and that's a process that they should believe in. This is where a mediator is necessary to be helping the government that people do not trust and with the people that the government has lost ties with.
Turning back to you, Ahmed Ali, to address the situation in Anbar with the Sunni insurgency, presumably this happened because the Sunnis felt that they were being marginalized, not being included in either the government or in other sectors of society. There were grievances, as Sarhang Hamas Saeed referred to. Talk about those grievances and why, after so many appeals to al-Maliki, why he has not perhaps addressed their concerns short of this military approach. How do you assess the situation?
Prime Minister Maliki has attempted to deal with some of those grievances. Some of them are easy to solve, others are much more difficult. But Prime Minister Maliki, certainly by December of last year, did have an opportunity to win the support of the population, as outlined by my colleague Sarhang. However, very shortly after that, the other decisions that he took led to the fall of Fallujah and to the hands of gunmen, and also a much more energized insurgency in Iraq. And at the moment, the insurgency in Iraq, and in particular ISIS, is not limited to Anbar. It is pushing very strongly to get to Baghdad even today, and it wants to threaten the seat of the government, and it wants to ensure that the Iraq government is as unstable as it could get. For these reasons, and these elections have to go hand in hand with a strategy to solve the security crisis, and these elections have to represent an opportunity to reach out to the Iraqi Sunni political leadership and attempt to have their support in order to isolate the militant elements who are very simply telling the population that politics is not a good way for you to achieve your goals. You have to resort to violence.
Right now, obviously, we're waiting for the outcome of the election, but that could take many months. What's going to happen in the meantime? What efforts could be made to, in a sense, co-opt some of the Sunni tribal leaders, which presumably has occurred before, but evidently has not been successful for a variety of reasons, as Sarhang said, the spillover from the war in Syria and other outside elements perhaps fueling the al-Qaeda elements against the Shiite-led government. What do you see can be done to reverse this tide, which could, as some analysts say, slide into a major civil conflict?
It has to be said that civil war is today possible in Iraq. It has not reached to that level yet, but it is very much possible, and that is what the Iraqis are concerned about, and these elections have to be used very wisely by the different political actors to ensure that Iraq is pulled back from that brink. This process of forming the government will take a long time, and Prime Minister Maliki constitutionally will be a caretaker prime minister during that period of time, and as a result, he will be in a position to change the outcome to his benefit. And the international community has to closely watch the government formation period and ensure that not a great deal of influence or pressure is being applied on the Iraqi judiciary or the Iraqi political class, or using the Iraqi security forces to threaten opponents or pressure opponents.
Turning back to you, Sarhang Hamas Saeed, what about the United States? What's the role for the U.S. right now? We know that President Obama has hailed the fact that there are no more U.S. troops there. Others criticize the fact and say that if they had been there, perhaps some of the deterioration might not occur. But this is sort of water under the bridge right now. But is the United States, certainly it still has a stake in what goes on, because if civil war breaks out, if greater violence occurs, the whole region is affected, and this affects not only regional but U.S. interests. What role is the United States playing, if at all, in encouraging Prime Minister Maliki, while he is a caretaker prime minister until the new government is formed? What are they encouraging him to do? Are they successful in doing so? You said a mediator is necessary to help contain the situation.
The United States and the international community as a whole have an interest in supporting Iraq go through these difficult times. And so during the pre-election stage, the United States has helped the electoral process for holding it on time and making it as fair and transparent as possible. And that milestone has been met. What is now, it's watching the results as everybody else to see what will be the outcome of the results and how the political weight will be restructured as a result of the elections. It is very important at this stage. The Iraqis are usually not fast in the government formation. Even when the United States was involved, these things took a lot of time. It is important for the United States to engage, to advise its friends to take this matter seriously, and Iraq doesn't have the luxury of waiting to form the government for a long time because of the active violence that Ahmed described. The geography has increased, and it could increase. So the U.S. has supported the Iraqi government through counterterrorism information and also through weapons and helping to increase the Iraqi capacity. That is important to continue, but the support on the political front for the government formation to happen in a transparent process and as quickly as possible, that is an area where the United States and the international community could engage and help the Iraqis.
Back to you, Ahmed Ali. Your take on the U.S. role, particularly with regard to any kind of political advice, but in this post-election environment, we know that the United States has urged al-Maliki to try to open up the political space for the Sunni minority in the region where they dominate, to try to contain this insurgency and to push back against al-Qaeda. But do you see that role continuing and any kind of progress in that regard?
The United States is certainly an important player in Iraq. It has been for a while, and it could be moving forward. It is very critical for the United States government not to appear as supporting any certain outcome or a certain candidate, because with those conditions, the United States will lose its effectiveness as a mediator and as an honest broker. And it is also very critical for the United States to ensure mechanically that the vote counting process, which is underway in Iraq at the moment, should be free and fair and transparent and not under any influence or actions that could alter the results. The Iraqis and the Iraqi politicians will negotiate, and they will squabble, and there will be a great deal of tensions, and those tensions can add to destabilization and further deterioration in security. But they would look for an honest broker, some country who could get them to the table and have them talk to each other and hammer out an agreement. And the United States is positioned to play that role. Other countries are also seeking to play a role in the government formation process, like the Iranian government or other regional countries. They want to have an influence in Iraq, and as a result, the U.S. government does have equity and interest in a strong and stable Iraq, because if Iraq is not stable, it will be a threat to U.S. national security interests.
Back to you, and for the last word for you both, Sarhang Hamasayid, what about Iran? Obviously, Iran backs this government. Are they playing a constructive role? And how do you see the next few months playing out with respect to this insurgency and then the growth of now Shiite militias to try to combat the al-Qaeda-linked militants? This is a very dangerous spiraling.
Iran is definitely playing an active role. Whether it's a constructive role, that is bigger, more difficult question to answer, and from whose perspective. Definitely, they have a strong influence inside the country. It's in their interest also for Iraq to be stable, but they also want to make sure that their influence there will be strong, because it has always been said that as Iran loses its grip on Syria, it will try to tighten it on Iraq. And this has been a major concern for the Iraqi leadership for a long time. So it is important to find a stable solution for Iraq. And the more the fighting continues, the more the Iraqi army loses its diversity, because the more it fights in the Sunni areas, the more likely that the Sunni members will defect and will not be part of our role. The more the Iraqi army will be perceived as a sectarian army. And this is where the division will go higher and this potential conflict will go on. And this is where the proxies like militias that has been supported by external countries will have a larger role instead of institutions of the state. So I think Iran has an interest in finding a formula that is stability, and that's the common interest that they share with the United States. They want an Iraq that is stable. And the hope is that a more rapprochement or a deal on Iran's nuclear weapons could positively contribute to that conversation. But a protracted Syria conflict and Iran losing its grip will not be good for Iraq.
Well, certainly external matters will play a role, whether it's the continuing war in Syria or a potential deal. But the last word to you, Ahmed Ali, regarding the next few months and how you see the insurgency and then the growth of the Shiite militias to combat the Al-Qaeda-linked militants. Do you see a way to stop the spiraling as the government is in formation?
There is certainly a way to stop the spiraling of violence. The Iraqi Shia militias that you mentioned have been very active over the last year, year and a half, and many of them are backed by the Iranian government, and some of them are even allies of the prime minister, and they're seeking to play a political role in the country, and some of them are competing in the elections as well. And the Iraqi government is in a position to limit the activities of those militias, because their activities are also destabilizing for the country. And the Iranian government is interested in having a friendly government in Baghdad after the results are announced and government formation negotiations get underway. And the crucial part will become for all the political parties involved is ensuring that the next Iraqi government is representative and is inclusive.
Well, let's hope that that will be the case, and we will be bringing you news about the results from the Iraqi election in the weeks to come. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Sarhang Hamasaid, Senior Program Officer for the Middle East and North Africa Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Ahmed Ali, Iraq Research Analyst and Team Leader at the Institute for the Study of War. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your keen insights.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Bob Doty. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
Encounter on The Voice of America. Encounter on The Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.